This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Hello and welcome to TV Black Box. I am Rob McKnight, also known as Rob underscore McKnight on social media, and I'm joined by actress Sarah Monahan, who you can find at Shrimp Tank. Hello, Shrimp Tank.
G'day.
Oh, Ella, you've gone for the Australian greeting this week.
I just came from Keith Urban, so yes.
Yes, so Sarah is on a boat in Florida as she speaks to us, and she went to a Keith Urban concert last night. She's a little tired.
Yes, there was Keith and then fireworks, and that all finished at about, I got home at about midnight-ish, and it's now just rolling on 6 a.m. here.
Oh, come on, that's nothing. You can do that.
Yeah, I'm not that young anymore.
Also joining us is the viewer's advocate, Steve Mulk, who you can follow by searching for Mulk's TV Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Rob. And while one of you might be tired, the other might be tired and emotional.
Hey, look, for more on the stories we talk about today, go to tvblackbox.com.au and don't forget to leave a review on iTunes, as that will help more people discover the podcast. But guys, there's a lot to talk about, so let's get to the news. And TV Black Box can exclusively reveal Seven's plans to take on Married at First Sight next year. According to our sources, the planned second series of My Kitchen Rules, starring Colin Fastenage, that was set to air this year, has been pushed back to 2020. Considering the show takes 5 months to shoot and filming hasn't begun yet, Seven insiders confirm there's no way it can air this year. The show is very different to the series of MKR that aired this year and is more like the original My Kitchen Rules, with Fastenage and other chefs involved ahead of MKR host Pete Evans and Manu Fadel. I'm also hearing the creative for the show is changing daily as under pressure producers try to get the format right. The normal version of MKR won't be ready to launch until 2020 as filming has been pushed back until November. Mark, this is a big play by Seven, isn't it?
It is, and they need to pull something big out of the box, Rob. The underwhelming response that they got from My Kitchen Rules this season, which was their big 10th anniversary season. Like, this was one that they were hoping to get people ringing home about. Just didn't fire because Married at First Sight was massive.
It was a mammoth hit. And the other thing, though, we were talking on this very podcast, that what do you do if you're Seven? Do you stick in MKR that you know is going to get 800,000, 750,000, 800,000 up against Married at First Sight? Or do you try something very different, which runs its own set of risks? They're trying to have their cake and eat it too here, aren't they? By using the MKR brand and launching that at the beginning of the year, but it's a new format that just might energise viewers.
Yeah, without swallowing myself up my own asshole, they definitely are in brand management mode. They have to make sure that My Kitchen Rules as a brand is still considered to be premium, because that's part of what they then sell to their advertisers and sponsors to get involved in the show. To have it pushed, or have the end special, you know, extra anniversary season where we're going to get this year move and change and morph into what we'll get at the start of next year. I mean, at this point, all bets are off. Who knows what it's going to look like? But it has to be good. It has to look good. And it has to be captivating from, like, episode one. People will not give a revamp of a show like that another look if it fails to grab them.
No, Sarah, it certainly has to hook viewers off episode one, and there's obviously a lot of pressure. I'm definitely hearing the creative there is being worked through as we speak. They're not shooting yet. They're still prepping for the shooting. So there's a lot of pressure on this team, and there's a new executive producer because the Ricky Prouts has gone, and he was basically known for giving MKR the success that it has had over the 10 years. But it's a whole new ballgame now, isn't it?
They've got a new producer. That's always a big shake-up there. I hope it works for them.
Do you think viewers would be fatigued by Married at First Sight? Because it went to the heights of what could they possibly do next? Did it go too far, leaving no room to go next year?
Probably. Although people might just watch in just to see if they can top the craziness of this year and go full frontal.
What's crazier than this year? Like, honestly, we had two female-led affairs. We had another woman. Well, one of those women was shopping herself around to a whole bunch of blokes that only got revealed in the final episode reunion. Like, short of a live on-screen threesome, I don't know how it's going to get weirder.
Well, there you go. That might be it. The US shows just keep trying to kill people on air. so they can be the first one to have a live death. I mean, who knows what networks are going for these days to get viewers.
I just don't even want to think about it.
Well, the ABC has looked within the corporation to find its new managing director, with the announcement that David Anderson is the new MD of the ABC. The appointment of an ABC employee into the managing director role comes after the disastrous term in office of the predecessor, Michelle Guthrie, who was sacked by the board last year. Anderson's first point of order will be to determine the futures of the four members of ABC's 10-member senior team who are currently operating in acting roles. Will he give them the jobs or find replacements? Sarah, it feels like the ABC is really getting its act together now after the chaos of last year.
I hope so. I mean, maybe I think just wipe the whole board, start fresh, start clean, make some good TV, spend the taxpayers' money wisely. Yeah.
Do you know what? I think maybe last year I would have agreed with you on the changing of the board, but I actually think with Ita there now, it's becoming a really tight ship and some good decisions are being made. You know, like, in the past, I think a decision about the MD role could have lasted almost 12 months while they were doing an international search. This has happened, Mark, pretty quickly since Ita came into the chair. We've got this big announcement. They had the meeting, the board meeting on Friday, and within an hour of them making the decision, there was a press release out, then wasting no time with setting the agenda for the ABC.
Yeah, the only publicly visible decision that we've seen from the ABC board has been this announcement of managing director. I'm sure they've made others, but that's been the one that's come to pass most recently. And you'd have to say there's Ida's hand in that, in how they, like you said, they've gotten the news out sort of as promptly as they've made the decision. From what I read, I think it was in The Australian today, that when it came down to it, it was David Anderson and there was one other that they basically put through a day-long grilling and made their decision from that, and it would have been to the other guy, thanks very much, but not today. Congratulations to the other one, and then write the press release, make it go.
And it was a unanimous decision by all reports.
Which is awesome. Look, I think that the... I think, no question, the board could do with some new blood. However, it's not the time for that now. Now that we've had the chair change and the MD change, the responsibility of the board is to effectively help rewrite the ship, focus on plain sailing and go hell for leather at whoever makes government after the 18th of May to make sure that the funding for the ABC is increased / restored to levels that have been
which
just sliced
Labor have
and diced.
Promised.
Yeah, yeah, and it needs to be the case.
I think the board have learnt a lot of lessons, and I've actually got some faith in the board, especially under Ita. Ita does not suffer fools. And
yeah, she doesn't fuck around. She gets shit done.
Yeah, exactly. And you're seeing that. And I think it'll be quite interesting to see whether the people in the acting roles are elevated to the full positions, which by all accounts, you know, like from what I'm understanding coming out of the ABC at the moment, there is a lot of goodwill internally, which there hasn't been for years. Mm. People are working together. I think the appointment of David is actually seen as something very, very, that the staff are very grateful for.
Yes.
So I think David Anderson has the goodwill of staff. It'll be interesting to see what happens now.
Yeah, definitely. And the executive appointments at the top of the ABC with him are going to be super, super important.
Absolutely. Well, Australian blog TV Tonight has revealed Channel 9 won't show the final episode of The Big Bang Theory on the same day as the US. In fact, episode 22 is set to air next week, but 9 has only aired up until episode 15. Sarah, in this day and age, is this kind of delay acceptable? You know, networks complain about illegal downloading, but we live in a society now where we want to see it at the same time as the US. There's going to be spoilers everywhere for the finale of this show. Why shouldn't Australian viewers see it at the same time?
Yeah, it seems kind of silly, especially since, like, thankfully I came home earlier last night and just shut the internet off so I didn't see Game of Thrones that I missed out on. But, I mean, Big Bang Theory, it's going to be all over, like, the news and Facebook and Twitter. I mean, I'm not sure there's really any spoilers there, but it's still, it's just show it the same day, people. It's not that hard.
I think it hurts them, doesn't it, Mark? Because it's stopping people watching the broadcast of it.
It's definitely a misstep, but I wouldn't put past... I wouldn't put it past them that they actually air it out of order and that they do show it same day and date.
that would not make sense because the storylines are leading up to the to something happening, and it's hard to tell where it's going. But what will be the cause for the series coming to a conclusion? There certainly seem to be some things happening in the storylines that would lead maybe to some part of the group leaving.
Yeah, look, and I hear that. I guess I would put it in context by saying it is a half-hour multi-camera sitcom. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not a massive drama. Again, people that will have wanted to have kept up will have kept up. They're not going to care necessarily. So the opportunity for Nine is to get, you know, an extra bounce, the big sell. Here's the final episode of The Big Bang Theory, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you can turn around any of the channels on Nine and see episodes of The Big Bang Theory, even Seven at one stage, I think, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. They're just airing episodes. Like,
but that's different. That's different because The Big Bang Theory is very watchable. And yes, you can watch it out of order and you can just see an episode and it's just good TV. And I am a fan. But I think there is something different when you're leading up to a major event like the final episode of the entire series.
I'm not saying they've done the right thing by being this far behind. This is absolutely them dropping the ball. And to be, what's that, if my maths are even close to correct, 7 weeks behind them in 2019 is, you're not taking your viewers seriously.
Yeah. Well, the news wars are heating up in Melbourne, where Seven News with Peter Mitchell is making a strong comeback against Nine's dominance. TV Black Box has been following the closely fought battle for the past month, but now mainstream media has picked up on the story, with the Herald Sun's Colin Vickery noting the battle. Nine News with Peter Hitchener has won 8 weeks of official survey, but Seven has won the last 2 weeks. While there is some argument over what constitutes a win, Nine has always played the 21 rule, meaning the first team to get to 21 weeks wins, and there are only 40 weeks in an official survey. Sarah, how do you choose what news service you watch?
Well, I'm going to be very controversial and say that I watch Fox News, or Faux News.
Choice of a president.
Well, so here's the backstory, though. When I was working on the border as an analyst and we had some news reports that got leaked out to the media, and one set of networks and one candidate said there's nothing wrong on the border, and the other candidate on a different network actually read the exact numbers that we had. And so... in our office, we had like 18 different televisions and all of the different news networks going. And we all looked at the one and we all got in trouble and had to change the way that we disseminated our analyst stuff after that, because how dare the, you know, they actually announced the real thing on the news. And so, but that's how I chose my news network, was the one that actually
told the
truth.
That was on Fox, presumably?
That was on Fox, which everyone calls Faux News. And so if there's something... And then it was funny because we used to actually VPN and watch Australian news when we wanted news without propaganda. And we actually used to... Well, because there's always a slant in the US when you're watching something. And sometimes we would just watch... We'd like dial into like Nine because they always had pretty good coverage in the US. And so we would watch, put Nine News on the TV in the government office in the US. So we could see what was going on. But, yeah, I think it's more just who's got the prettier weather girl and who's not got just crap going on, who actually tells me stuff I want to hear.
If we're to be honest, Malk, there isn't a huge difference between Seven and Nine, although presenters play a big part. You know, like if you look at Sydney, Peter Overton is such a dominant force and, in fact, has won all 10 weeks of survey. In Melbourne, the deficit is 8 weeks to Nine, 2 weeks to Seven. And in Brisbane, it's a much closer race with 6 weeks to Nine and 4 weeks to Seven. Sorry. It's 6 weeks to Seven, four weeks to nine, which is a big turnaround because Nine's dominance in Brisbane over the last few years led to major changes in that market. Melbourne's an interesting one because we've had Peter Mitchell and Peter Hitchener up against each other for years. But what would lead the change? We have a new Sean Menengola has gone down to Seven News. He's obviously been tweaking it. Is that helping the comeback? And obviously with the lead-in of AFL, that's helped boost numbers. But are people seeing that certain new service and going, oh, actually, this is quite good now?
Yeah, look, there's all sorts of analysis that we could layer into each of these news markets in the capital cities around the country. It's definitely a 7-9 fight, though, along the East Coast, where in Adelaide, 7 are untouchable, and Perth, there's only one channel.
Yes, 7 News Perth or 7 Perth could put a test bar to air and still rate 40,000 viewers. Oh, I think, and 100,000.
Wasn't it last year or the year before, one night they did because something went wrong and they did put up a test pattern for 2 minutes and still won? The interesting challenge when we talk about who wins the news, it is 100% a PR battle. Because while we talk about the 21 rule, that you're talking about non-employee, you know, you win 21 weeks, you win the news year. In the latest Media Week podcast conversation with Michael Stevenson, the head of sales for Nine, he openly said, we sell weeks 1 to weeks 52/53, 1st of January to 31st of December. They don't care that there's non-ratings breaks. That's not a thing. People are watching TV. They understand that there's ebbs and flows around some of those times, which chicken and egg.
So you're saying he wouldn't sell the fact that Nine can claim to be number one?
He would absolutely sell that Nine claimed to be number one. However, the buyer who was also interviewed with him at the same time said, we buy 52 to 53 weeks a year. So while it's important to know who is number one in the context, they also said that total people is bullshit. That's not what they buy for. They buy entirely for demos based on what... Now, it adds to the guff, you know, look at us, we're the number one network, how great is it? But that advertisers care about who they are selling
to. And I get that. But there's obviously a reason why networks put out press releases about being number one in total people. I keep hearing that total people is irrelevant.
Because they want jerks like us to write stories about
it. We do stories about it, but they sell that to us as well.
For sure. Because that's what it's... And look, it is the easiest figure to understand. When we say all of the eyeballs watching TV did this, anyone can understand it, and that's great. To that end, total people is a great market play in that you get to push through the mainstream media. We are the number one news network. We are the number one this network. My Kitchen Rules is the number one thing. Blah, blah, blah. Married at First Sight, the number one program this year. All of that stuff will happen. However, in the way that people view it and the media analyze it versus the way that media buyers and salespeople in TV sell it, two different beasts.
Well, legendary journalist Robert Penfold has announced his resignation as Nine's US Bureau Chief. Penfold, who has been with the network for 43 years, will stay on as a consultant and contribute feature stories. I spoke to Robert earlier this afternoon about his resignation. Robert, I cannot believe you're leaving. You are a part of television. You've always been there. You've talked us through every major event. Why are you leaving us? Say it isn't so.
Yeah, well, I thought it was time to step back a little at least. You know, I'm a grandfather now, which I'm very proud of, and we're enjoying that. And Shara and I just want to spend a little bit more time out there sort of getting around, maybe travelling a lot more as well. Mm. I travel a lot for work, but when I get there, there's usually a disaster or a shooting or something untoward. So it's not really a joyful experience. But now we want to just get out and enjoy ourselves a little. And I thought, you know, I've been with Nine for so long, 43 years. I thought it was time maybe to step aside, give someone else a break, why not?
But, Rob, you've been such a fixture on our screens. I actually can't imagine you not being there talking us through the big events, but you're still part of the network, aren't you? You're not leaving entirely.
No, that's right. Yeah, they've been very kind to me and sort of saying, would you still hang around a little and maybe... Because I know that they love these feature stories that I do, which is sort of Americana from an Australian point of view, which I love doing, and I'm going to do a few more of those. And also, we've got the election campaign coming, and we also have a continual turnover of young reporters coming in here. And, you know, sometimes it's good to have somebody to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this is what the Senate's all about, this is what the House of Reps is all about, and I'm going to sit and work a little bit with some of the new reporters in here, not get in their way, but occasionally drop in and just have a bit of a yarn about things.
Now, mate, like me, you're a Campbelltown boy. Can you, in your wildest dreams, imagine that little kid in Campbelltown travelling the world, seeing the things you've seen?
Look, you know, it is really still a surprise to me. When I left school from Campbelltown High School back in 1969, would you believe, 50 years
wow.
coming up this year, I had no idea about being a journalist. I had no plan or whatever. It was just pure luck that a friend of mine said, hey, look, there's a really good story. There's a good job advertised in the newspaper, in the local paper. It suits you down to the ground. I said, what is it? He said, it's a cadet journalist. I'm going, cadet journalist? What? Wonder what that's about. So he said, you know, you're always reading the paper. You know, we're all out playing around and mucking around and doing stuff. You're coming in and you got clippings from the Daily Mirror in those days, the Daily Telegraph, and you're telling us about what happened. And he said, I think you're a journalist, but you don't know it. So I applied for the job and I actually got it.
That's fabulous. I mean, that is the definition of a good friend, someone who steers you in that career, that direction that's changed your life.
That's right. That's a mate of mine, John Crawford. He lives in Kiama these days, and he's an architect down there, and he's still working as well. So I think he'll say, well, at least I'm still doing a bit of work along the way.
Now, Rob, I was making a promo a few years ago at Nine. It was an experience promo, and I actually had the opportunity to trawl through some vision, and I saw that extraordinary piece to camera you did as the Berlin Wall was coming down. Tell me what it's like to be in the middle of a moment like that.
Well, it was quite extraordinary, actually, because we had gone over there a couple of days before thinking that there was a bit of an uprising happening perhaps in East Germany, not knowing, of course, as no one did, that the wall would be tumbling down. It was only in the middle of the night, actually, that I actually got a phone call from Sydney saying, wow, it's amazing to think that you are there where you are. This is pre-mobile phones, yes. Of course. Called the hotel room at about 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, yeah, it's incredible because, you know, as a journalist, when people ring you, you always pretend at least you know a bit about something, about what's going on. So I bluffed it because I didn't want them to think I didn't know. To think that they're knocking down the Berlin Wall while you're there. I'm going, yeah, it's incredible. I opened up the curtains of the hotel room and we were quite near the Berlin Wall at the time and actually saw people running all over everywhere. So I said, don't worry, we're onto it and we're going to get some good stuff here, but we're just getting the camera ready to go. but to actually then, the next day, to actually stand on the Berlin Wall, it was quite extraordinary because the day before I was doing stories, there were a lot of crosses and that had been implanted. The people's names on the people have been actually shot trying to get across the border at the time. And that day I was doing a piece to camera about if I stand right close to the wall, I could even get shot myself. The next day I was actually literally standing on top of the wall with all the young East German soldiers heavily armed looking up at us thinking, should we shoot them or whatever? They put fire hoses on us to get us off, and then eventually they gave up. So it just showed you the extraordinary change that had happened within a 24-hour period.
That really is extraordinary. I think some people might not realise the hard work that goes into being a foreign correspondent. It looks glamorous. You get to live in other countries. You get to travel the world. But you're in a situation where you're going to danger zones and where stories are happening. You're not really getting to take in the sights and sounds of the location, are you? Because you're doing crosses, and especially in this 24-hour news cycle now, you're doing crosses for the early news, Today Show, the morning news, the 4:30 news, the 5 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news. It's a really different beast now, isn't it?
Oh, totally, yeah. Like today, for instance, you know, we don't obviously have anyone in Russia, but they needed somebody to actually cover the Russian plane crash that happened. And, you know, I did three updates on the story through the Today Show, scripting it. I've done an 11:30 live shot. I've done the afternoon news, and I've also done a 6 o'clock piece as well. And I've also written 500 words for online. And that's a day, and it's only, what, 7:30 at night here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things have changed dramatically, whereas in the past it would have always been just a one shot for a 6 p.m. piece. But and these are the demands that are put on young journalists these days, and not the reason I'm stepping down, but at the same time I have my old mates who are all ex-reporters saying, man, I would love to be, I want to get back in. And I said, I'm sorry, old boy. Once you're out of this business, you could never get back in because you could never adapt to what the demands are these days. So I have a real admiration for these young reporters now who are coming through, and I love working with. And I've had so many great young reporters coming through here, but I love working with them and just helping them through those extra pressures that go as far as a foreign bureau is concerned, more so than if you're working in a local news area where you might do one or two stories a day at the most. And it's, that's been satisfying and probably swings the story back to the great fun and the enjoyment that I've had working with terrific young reporters over the years coming in from Nine.
And you do love it. I've always had that sense from you that you love the job, you know, and I guess when you're doing something you love, that's the greatest reward. That's why you've lasted 43 years.
Yeah, I'm going to miss it a lot. I get up in the morning and obviously scour. I still get the paper, which is not a lot of people do. Actually, I'm reading the paper, the old LA Times that comes in, and the Wall Street Journal. and fish around online. So it's going to be a dramatic change for me doing that. But I do, yeah, I do love what I'm doing, and that's why I've been speaking to a couple of journalism schools around it, both here and also in Australia as well, and asked them if they would like somebody to come in and have a bit of a yak to all the young would-be reporters. Right. Because I'd love to sort of tell these kids about what a terrific job it's been and what great opportunities there are if they get into the business.
They're very lucky people to have you speaking to them. Before I let you go, what is the most bizarre thing that's happened out on the road when you've been covering a story?
The most bizarre thing, I suppose, probably the most bizarre thing and probably the most dangerous thing as well was when we were actually in Slovenia and I was covering the war there, and we had gone down to find a group of Yugoslav soldiers who were actually trapped on a freeway. They were surrounded by the Slovenian soldiers. The war had just started at that point. And we got in because obviously we were media and they needed the attention that they had wounded soldiers down there. So the Yugoslavs allowed us to go in, which I thought was a strange thing. And I was thinking, once I'm in here, is this a good idea? Probably not, seeing I have three children at home. And so we go into there. We go in there, and as soon as we get in there, the young lieutenant who's in there pulls out the gun, points it at me, and said, "I've got you in here because I need you to drive my wounded soldiers to hospital." And with that, he loaded a wounded soldier in the back of my car, another one in the back of the BBC car, and said, "Okay, off you go." And so we drove wounded soldiers out of their area, out of the Yugoslav area, into the Slovenian area, of course. And here we are driving into, I suppose, the enemy zone with a guy in jungle greens looking like very much like a wounded soldier sitting on the back seat of our car, taking him to hospital.
Wow.
So the only good thing was I said to the cameraman, Matt, at the time, "Hey, guess what? We've got the story in the car. Start shooting." So, he swung the camera around and started shooting, and we got a great story out of it. And we also got a very badly wounded young man to hospital as well, which we drove up to the hospital waving out white cloths and white bits of paper, hoping that they wouldn't shoot us, which they almost did.
And that is a scary part of what you do. And when you've got a family, does it make it that much harder?
Yes, it does. I suppose in many ways I was thinking that, I don't know whether you think about it at the time. I think about it more now than then. You know, mm-hmm. I've talking about families, you know, I was down with Robert Trimboli's body. That's another weird story that we covered when we went to the morgue to find out where Robert Trimboli, the great mafia boss, of course, mm-hmm. from Australia, who had escaped and disappeared into Europe. They said, "Oh, he's not here, he's in the cemetery." I said, "Well, he couldn't be in the cemetery, he only died a couple of weeks." But definitely in the cemetery. So we went down to the cemetery, and all we found was a gate man standing at the gatehouse of the old cemetery. We said, "Do you have an Australian here?" And he goes, "Yes, but you can't see it." I said, "Well, one of the reporters, probably not me, may have been, pulled out $20. We handed it to him, he took us in, and there was Robert Trimboli's body, stark naked, with a sheet over it, laying on a slab with his head, with a brick under his head as a pillow.
Oh, my God.
And I thought about that because I bring that story up because at the same time I was worried about the fact that my wife was 9 months pregnant at the time. And I thought, should I be down here doing all this? And the next night, of course, I get a phone call in the middle of the night. She's gone into labor. By the time I get back to London, the baby's born. And she has two girlfriends around me who give me dagger looks as I walk into the room where she's nursing the baby. But my lovely wife, Shah, said, "Lovely to have you home, darling. I understand it was a good story. You had to be there."
Now that is a wife. And I'm glad that you will get to spend some real quality time with her and get the chance now to show her the sights and the proper sights of some of the amazing places you've been to. I've seen lots of pictures of your family on Facebook, and you are a close, tight-knit family. I'm sure they'll love having Dad and Granddad around more.
Thank you very much. And she even forgave me when I came home from Somalia and put dysentery into the house, and all three of them ended up in hospital in London on Christmas Day.
Oh, no. Well, Rob,
the stories go on and on, I can tell you.
You have to write a book, that's for sure. I can't wait to read it. You've got to write it, Rob. Hey, thanks for being on TV Black Box today.
Okay, Rob, nice to speak with you.
He is a lovely man, and we wish him all the very best. I cannot speak highly enough about him. He is such a legend. Good luck, Robert Penfold, and thank you for all the stories you've brought to us. Meanwhile, Channel 9 and Sky News have today announced the closure of their joint venture, Your Money. Nine CEO Hugh Marks and Australian News Channel CEO Paul Whittaker said the partners had made the closure decision as the revenue model had proved more difficult than envisaged and not delivered to expectations. This was due to a number of factors that could not be rectified in the short term. The closure comes just 7 months after a major launch involving senior executives across both companies. Sources tell TV Black Box Sky News Business would not have lasted this long without the partnership, so expect the channel to cease operation completely. Other sources tell us the sales team were finding it virtually impossible to sell advertising as budgets had already been set when the channel launched, and the sales team was only formed in September, so it was always an uphill battle. Mulk, when Nine merged with Fairfax, was that basically the end of this partnership, or is it just simply a case of economics?
I think economics weighed fairly heavily on it, though it would be a tough sell for News to be in partnership with its direct competitor. That's the
but
short
mate,
answer.
If they're making money, they don't care.
Oh, look, I haven't worked in either of them to know for sure. All I have worked in the past have been situations where if a competitor came knocking, you might take the meeting, but you'd only do it cynically.
Look, I can say that sources told me that Sky News Business was on the skids.
Yes.
Before the merger with Nine, and if that hadn't happened, it was all over.
Oh, I'm sure, absolutely. Look, it all but guaranteed. I mean, even this news today is shambolic for the people that work for the channel, because now you've got a whole bunch of people that are, well, look, in the next 2 weeks, have to find jobs.
And people from Nine came over to that channel. You know, like, they actually left Nine and came over as part of this. It's not great for the industry. We always like to see people employed, so it's certainly not a day of celebration. It's quite sad, actually.
Yeah. The line in the press release about it, with the one that got me, was them talking about that both, all parties, I think it was something along the lines of, I'm misquoting, pardon me, but will do their best to find jobs for all of the people affected. Do your best, huh? Sorry, we did our best, but all of you don't have jobs. Aww.
Well, can you believe it's been 20 years since Who Wants to Be a Millionaire launched on Channel 9? Back then, it was a weekly show in prime time before it evolved into an afternoon game show. Host Eddie Maguire has asked more than 40,000 questions in 2,000 episodes and given away nearly $80 million in prizes. Sarah, it's been a worldwide phenomenon, but this really is a remarkable achievement, isn't it?
20 years is crazy. And there's been, like, the Slumdog Millionaire movie that was spawned off of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it?
But this
originally
is just 20 years for the Australian version.
Where was the original one?
UK?
Yes, it was certainly, Denmark? I feel, a Europe format. But when it came to Australia, Eddie completely owned it. It was a primetime one-hour show. And when they did the celebrity edition, Molly Meldrum stole the spotlight. Do you remember that, Mulk, when Molly did it? It just, I don't know, there was something about that moment because no one expected Molly to be that intelligent. I think that's what it was. And he actually did really,
people
really
were
well
caught
at
off
it.
Guard.
But, you know, congratulations to Nine of reinventing it as a five o'clock and 5:30 then and now 5 o'clock afternoon game show. It's a phenomenal result.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a huge outcome for a show that even in its longevity has been reinvented a little bit and those sorts of things. And it's always had sort of the Grim Reaper's sort of scythe hanging over it, particularly the last 3 or 4 years, because The Chase has been smashing it. But
but you know what? In the rankings, Hot Seat is only just behind The Chase, and it's certainly beating 10 News, so it's not doing that badly. It's just The Chase is a runaway phenomenon, which Hot Seat once was as well.
Well, and full credit tonight for sticking with it, because the opportunity is, what do you replace it with?
Exactly.
Pointless?
Wheel of Fortune, which every time they bring it back to reinvent it, I remember one of the classic reinventions of Wheel of Fortune one time was, it's an all-new Wheel of Fortune. And yes, they did eventually bring the touchscreen letterboard, but one of the big reinventions of Wheel of Fortune is they literally put three plasmas behind the contestants. And that
Wheel
was their big welcome to the noughties. Anyway, now it's time for Hatches and Dispatches with Sarah.
Thanks, Rob. The Daily Telegraph will appeal the ruling in its high-profile defamation case with actor Jeffrey Rush. Rush sued the telly and journalist Jonathan Moran following the article headlined King Lear. Last month, a judge awarded $850,000 in damages over stories alleging he behaved inappropriately towards a colleague during a 2015-2016 season of King Lear. ABC News Breakfast will be looking for a new co-host for Michael Rowland next year, with news Virginia Trioli is departing to replace radio presenter John Fain on ABC Mornings in Melbourne. Tim Warner has announced three senior appointments at Seven Studios. Therese Hegarty, currently director, content distribution and rights, has been appointed chief executive. Andrew Backwell, who has been consulting at Seven since late 2018, has been appointed director of production. Richard Henson, current head of sales, has been promoted to director of content sales. And a big congratulations to Angela Bishop, who's celebrating 30 years at Channel 10. The popular entertainment reporter and co-host of Studio 10 has become a household name over the years for her interviews with Oprah Winfrey, Nicole Kidman, and every A-list celebrity on the planet. Well done, Angela. And that is this week's Hatches and Dispatches, Rob.
I love Angela Bishop. Thank you, Sarah. She is such a legend, and she really goes the extra mile to get a storyline out of every interview. And I'm really glad that on the 30th anniversary, she can actually celebrate this milestone on the actual anniversary, because when she had her 25th anniversary, a lot of redundancies had just happened at 10, and the network would not allow her to celebrate her 25th anniversary. And so we just had to go by the wayside. And then I think it was about 3 or 4 months later, maybe 5 months later, when the dust had settled, and I didn't have a promo, and I said, oh, we'll celebrate Angela's 25th anniversary. And so we turned it into this big event, and it was great because the media picked up on it, the project did it, the papers did it, and she got to celebrate the 25th anniversary, even though it was like 3 or 4 months later. But I think she deserves every accolade, and I love her so very, very much. She's never let me down. She's always gone the extra mile, and so may she have another 30, 40 years in her. She's a great, great talent.
Make her sound like a boat.
She's also a beautiful person. Coming up, the inside word on big changes to the television landscape that are coming our way, and we'll share our viewing habits of the week. TV Black Box, we'll be right back.
These are real confessions.
Saying I've wanted to kill my mother since I was 8 years old.
From real serial killers.
I've just got to be violent.
Best-selling true crime author Amanda Howlett doesn't just talk about their crimes. She talks directly to them.
It's all getting a bit much, really.
It's the podcast that goes where others fear to tread. Monsters Who Murder. Serial Killer Confessions. Subscribe now in your favorite podcast feed.
And my co-host on Monsters Who Murder, Amanda Howard, who was mentioned in that promo, has done a review on tvblackbox.com.au of Zac Efron playing the notorious Ted Bundy in the new Netflix film Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. It's a fascinating review, and you can find that at tvblackbox.com.au. But right now it's time for the programming wrap with Malk.
Yes, many people do confuse me for Zac Efron, and I have to correct them often. I am not Zac Efron. I am indeed Steve Malk. Look, we got heaps to get through, so let's power on. Our first week post-Easter was pretty much paint by numbers. Lego Masters did massive business for Nine, with all three episodes over 1 million viewers, Five City Metro, and it doesn't look like slowing down. Importantly, it's dominating all the demos for Nine too. MasterChef Australia Season 11 premiered and has been a solid yet distant second at 7:30pm, but it hasn't sunk, and that is key for 10. Bachelor in Paradise slipped a little to mid-400s for its late-night finale week, and the less said about it, the better.
Malk, it was quite interesting for 10 that they managed to get in front of the ABC for the first time in survey this year. Mm-hmm. Because of the combo of MasterChef and Bachelor in Paradise, but they still lost primary channel share.
Yes.
So with Bachelor in Paradise finishing now, it's going to be interesting to see whether 10 slips behind the ABC this week. And if it does, I think they're in for still some heartache ahead.
Look, it'll be interesting because MasterChef is doing some reasonably solid sort of 700s.
Doing great.
And that's exactly what 10 needed it to do. Mm. And there are some nights where that 7:30 time slot doesn't hit 7 or 8 for the ABC. So in that situation, if 10 can pull two or three third places overall in the evening, for three nights during the week, then that's only going to help them because they haven't been pulling that at all.
No, but what was the key there is they had two shows doing not gangbuster numbers, but reasonably okay, and that was enough to help them get ahead of the ABC. The problem is they've been relying on one show per night to get them across the line, and that certainly didn't work in Q1.
I can't believe that sub 500 is considered to be okay now.
I know. It's the changing landscape, and especially when we're talking about 10. You know, we're still talking about their second-tier show is still outrated by The Chase.
Look at us being apologists for 10. Gosh. here's the other part of the big news in ratings. House Rules Season 7 premiered and softened quickly, drawing mid-500s and putting it in third place. It did pop up last night and overtook MasterChef. If House Rules can maintain that rage is yet to be seen. That is a real concern for 7 because House Rules has done pretty well, but it hasn't come third. But there's lots more to talk about than just the numbers, though. In a TV Black Box exclusive this week, we announced that 10 have renewed Dancing with the Stars. It didn't set screens on fire across the nation, though it was the most solid thing the network had in Q1, and it looked great. Rob, Dancing was broadly applauded for its casting and its approach. What have you heard about next year?
I have heard it's coming back. The production company have been told it's coming back. No official announcement yet, as we know. And it's interesting the story hasn't been followed up. I can only assume 10 are either denying it or just staying quiet. They certainly haven't denied the story publicly. But I can tell you it's coming back. I will bet the house on it. And it's not just a bet. This is an informed piece I've put on. That's why I didn't say rumours. It is the way it is. The production company are already starting to think about what season 2 will look like for 10.
And if anybody from casting's listening, I'm available.
I was just about to ask you, Sarah, who would you like to see on it with you?
I think it would be fun to do a Dancing with the Former Child Stars.
What, you and the fat kid from Hey Dad?
Oh, God, Matthew Croft.
Yeah, you know, and we could get Kate Ritchie, maybe some Jamie Croft, and then, you know, throw in a couple of kids from, like, Little House on the Prairie, you know, some American ones.
Round the Twist.
Denny Bonaducci, he'll do anything for a buck.
God.
Yeah, well, you know, people got rent to pay.
Absolutely. I'm not criticizing. I love that idea. Dancing with the Former Child Stars.
I can only imagine. Gosh. Well, hang on. Just wind back on that. How many former Young Talentine stars would we get on it?
There's plenty.
Ooh, yeah.
Danny Minogue's not doing anything. How do we know that Danny Minogue's not doing anything? 7 dropped some big news this week from the season 9 return of Australia's Got Talent.
Didn't this news drop on the day we dropped our bombshell about Colin Fastenage and 7 put out a whole heap of press releases to distract everyone from the big news of the day?
It kind of felt like that, Rob.
It did feel like that.
Former Australian Idol alum Ricky Lee Coulter will host, and the judging panel is full of surprises. Former Pussycat doll Nicole Scherzinger, theatre star and actual actress Lucy Durack, and TV personality Shane Jacobson will be joined by chef, author and MKR host Manu Fieldell.
Who's not exactly busy this year now.
Not as busy as he was expecting to be. Now, I know Manu has a performance background. However, that has never been a part of his on-screen personality in Australia. What do you think of this talent out the front of 7's new AGT, Sarah?
It's a very interesting lineup, and I always thought that I wouldn't be qualified to be a judge on one of these shows, but apparently I am.
Breaking news, you could be.
Also, again, I'm available. It's not a singing show, right? It's just people turn up and do just random, like, you know, cat juggling. So
they can sing, but yeah, it's not just singing.
It's not what you would expect. It looks like a lot of jobs in there for 7 Talent that aren't doing anything.
People who are signed contracts like Shane Jacobson, and we need to give them something to do.
But how did we get a pussycat doll?
Well, they always do. They usually go for someone overseas to give it some form of legitimacy. Yeah.
But no, I guess, it's interesting and it's better than having just a lineup of, all just, you know, proper talent people, because, you know, everyone at home is a random... I'm sorry, did that come out wrong?
That came out wrong, but I loved it.
No, it came out so right.
No, but I mean, like, to me, like, everyone at home's a judge, so why do you need, you know, actual judgy judge type people on a talent show like this? I mean, good for them. They actually chose some just a random motley crew of people who are not going to get along.
I know about Manu's performance background because I was at one of seven Brisbane's upfronts a few years ago. And let's just say Manu got on the sauce. And it was at the Gallery of Modern Art here in Brisbane. And Seven's upfronts happen at the start of the year, late January, early Feb. And it's designed for, it's a big local sales pitch. They bring in all of the local customers. They bring in some talent. They bring in about three or four media people. And I was lucky to be a part of that. And it's a good night. It's always fun. It's always interesting. They don't hold back spending cash. Let me tell you that. But yeah, Manu got drunk. And the night ended with all of us being asked to leave. And by asked to leave, we were the last people standing. Manu had been balancing chairs on his chin.
what?
Yeah. Like, you know, getting like a four-poster chair and putting one post on his chin and sort of walking around underneath it to balance it, juggle it like that. I think he had actually done some juggling earlier in the night. Just that kind of, just got that kind of
That's
fun.
That's brilliant.
Weird. Oh, look, crazy.
No, I've
good.
Got a new respect for him after that.
And then they all went off to the Treasury Casino and the two of the My Kitchen Rules contestants from that year got kicked out and all sorts of things went on. It was a hectic night.
That's standard fare for a casino visit, isn't it?
Oh, particularly when it's TV talent, reality yeah, TV right. talent. But, yeah, look, God bless AGT and may some people watch because I'm not going to. In more who thought this was a good idea news, MTV have announced that the Origliasso twins have been given their own series. Currently under the working title Jess and Lisa, The Veronicas, the series will give the audience, and I quote, an all-access pass to the raw and honest reality Jess and Lisa Origliasso face living life in the spotlight as one of Australia's biggest music exports. Right. Nothing about this is a good idea, is it, Sarah?
Well, I mean, did they film her, whichever one was hooked up with Ruby Rose, did they film them having their spectacular fights and all of that?
Now, that would have been brilliant. If they had a camera during that time as they were breaking up, that
They've
would have been gold.
They've only just started filming.
Well, I mean, maybe they'll get something interesting. It
screams.
Sometimes, though, it's the things that you don't think are going to be interesting that turn out to be winners, and sometimes things that you think are going to be amazing turn out to be super boring. I mean, power to them.
That's true. You know. I think you're right there. You never know. Let's see it, and then let's judge.
The only way it's going to work is if we're seeing part of their creative process that is making a new record, a la Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary, which was amazing television. That
I've
was
never
so,
seen
so good.
It. What happened?
Spoilers, Rob. Can I tell you spoilers?
Yes, you can in this context.
So the band are going through sort of a troubled phase. They've had a tough couple of albums that haven't gone well. They fire their bass player and have to hire a new one. So the start of it is that. And then the band basically goes into therapy to try and work out how they can live and
on
work
camera.
Together. Yeah, on camera.
Oh, to that's
the point
gold.
Where the therapist starts writing music with them and thinks he's the unofficial fifth member of Metallica. It is crazy. And here's the kind of insane that happens. The new guy that they get to play bass, sort of towards the start of the film, that the whole process of auditioning, they're sitting down at a table and they offer him the role to come and be the bass player of Metallica, and he loses his mind at that right? That's phenomenal. And then they tell him they're going to pay him $1 million.
Wow.
Just to join the band. It's crazy.
Oh, I'm going to go and see this. That's great.
And the album that came out of it wasn't even that good. So
it's called Monster, did you say?
Some Kind of Monster.
Right. Okay, there's our recommendation.
You don't even
week.
Have to know Metallica to watch it. Just be amazed at what goes on.
All right,
moving on. We already knew Laura Gibson and Bob Jelly were returning to Nine's nostalgic reincarnation of Sea Change. With production commencing this week, we learned who would be joining Sigrid Thornton and John Howard as they move back into Pearl Bay. It is an amazing list of Aussie talent. Brooke Satchwell, Dan Wiley, Wentworth's Katrina Milosevic, Darren McMullen for some reason, Ellen Newton, Kate Lister from Bad Mothers, and Alex Tarrant will all land on into our favourite fictional seaside town as well. Fans of the series will additionally be pleased to learn that Kerry Armstrong will reprise her role as Heather Jelly, and local business owner Kevin Harrington will be back as Kev Findlay. Importantly, the series creator and head writer Deb Cox returns to helm the series, which should keep fans very happy as to the flavour of Nine's reboot. Now, Rob, did you watch the original Sea Change?
Do you know, I didn't, and I really wish I had because it would have helped my career. When I was doing promos for Today Tonight and A Current Affair, they always wanted to do a Sea Change reference. This was in the early noughties, and it's like, it's the couple doing the Sea Change, and I had a vague idea what it meant, sure. But I never really had watched the show, so I couldn't do the references properly, and it came up time and time again. So I really felt my career suffered a little bit because I didn't know.
You could have just flicked over and watched an episode on the ABC, Rob. That's all you needed to do.
I couldn't bring myself to do it, but actually, it now... I don't know, at this stage in my life, it actually feels like the kind of thing I'd be interested in.
Well, have a look at it. I mean, it, as far as loves for Sigrid Thornton's character, there was Diver Dan, played by David Wenham.
I knew about Diver Dan.
There was Sean McAuliffe, played a series as her love interest. And then there was a William McInnes, who I think was the ultimate love that I think it fell through or something went on. Anyway, look, it's coming back onto Nine. If you're into Sea Change, I'm sure it'll be worth checking out. I like you, Rob, watched not a minute of it.
Right.
So, and I'm not intending to go and watch like any of the back catalogue to catch up.
See, I would. Is it available anywhere?
It's an ABC asset, so I can't tell you that it's on iView. I don't think that it is.
Shame.
It was probably in ABC shops on DVD for ages.
Mm-hmm. Someone probably has uploaded it to YouTube somewhere.
Just like Frontline. It's probably just got landed somewhere.
Yeah.
One of Foxtel's most successful channels, World Movies, will make the big move to free-to-air television. SBS have announced that they will bring The Library to Australians nationwide on July 1 on Channel 32 in high definition, scrapping the SD version of SBS Viceland. Unlike the subscription TV version, the channel will not be allowed to air R18+ films, so they'll need to be edited to MA standards first. Is this another plank in the sex before soccer strategy, guys?
Well, SBS always, yeah, I know. SBS always used to be known as the sex station on Friday nights or something, wasn't it? So maybe they're just tailoring to that market. It could actually be very successful for them.
Many a young man and young woman had their sexual awakening for a late night SBS film.
Well, you said it there, sex before soccer.
Well, that's the gag, right? That's what SBS stands for.
Yeah, that's right.
Sarah, what do you reckon? Is this going to help?
I mean, I always loved SBS.
Hello.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, they had...
It was obviously for the foreign language programming, wasn't it, Sarah?
Well, and my thing is like that you always saw movies on SBS that were the original ones that then the Americans made a version of.
Saw movies that you would never see anywhere else. And there was, to put the jokes aside for a moment, that was the beauty of SBS.
Well, and we, my husband and I have this joke about, you know, is this a British film or an American film? Because, like, say there was a movie where, I forget what it was, but in the American version it was like the creepy guy from 24. But he was, the girlfriend had been kidnapped and he wanted to follow in her footsteps and find out what happened to her. And in the American version, he lives because he has a new girlfriend. But in the German version, he doesn't. And so there's always been this whole thing in our house of like, you know, will everyone die or will someone survive? And so is it an American version or the European version? Because, you know, Americans always have to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
Which apparently SBS is also into.
Well, that's definitely, depending on the type of happy ending. That's definitely, the world movies thing has been something that I think for, ages has been considered to be like a premium channel on Foxtel because it was just bringing some of the best international cinema to Australian TV. And it was never cut for ads. It was allowed, it got a special ruling to broadcast R18 stuff. So it was putting some pretty, you know, reasonably racy stuff out there, and bringing some great auteur cinema to our screens. Now, the question will be how much they're going to cut the films up, both to meet the rating as much as drop ads in there, because there has to be that commercial sensibility. But the fact that it's going free-to-air and allowing another HD channel to run to the public is a phenomenal addition. That puts SBS's count, I think, at 5, like equaling 7, but with the most HD channels in their suite now.
And just today, Mulk, we heard from Laurie Patton, who approached TV Black Box and said, it's great to see the channel move on to the SBS free-to-air platform, where it will be available to a much wider audience. I just hope they don't massacre films by filling them full of commercials.
Yeah.
And Laurie was the founding CEO and creator of World Movies Channel.
Yeah, look, it's I think a win for all of us. So from July 1, as long as you've already got SBS Viceland standard definition already tuned, you might not even need to retune it. It should just go bang, and there it is.
Right.
And finally, in Mark Humphrey's news this week, we say goodbye to one Humphrey's vehicle and hello to one even closer to his heart. His weeknightly game show Pointless, co-hosted with Dr. Andrew Rochford, finishes this Friday, so make sure you get your fill before it's replaced by something infinitely less entertaining. However, fulfilling a long-held dream, Mark will join the official Australian jury for this year's 64th Eurovision Song Contest, along with Christine Arnoux, Lewis Hobber, Alice Chance and Mark Cummins. This is spectacular news, and congratulations to all at Mark Humphrey's. And that is the programming wrap.
Thank you very much. Before we head on
Thank
out,
you very
let's
Mulk.
Find out. Sorry?
Thank you very much.
Is that what I said?
Yes, you have to keep it in. It was brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before we go, let's find out what everyone's been watching this week. Sarah, what have you been filling your eyeballs full of?
I actually can't remember what I've watched this week because the last few days have just been music festival every night going downtown. But I think at the beginning of the week we watched Australian movie Backtrack, which I'd seen before, but for some reason the husband put it on again and I had to not spoil the end that, you know, creepy pedophile guy. So
I'm not into spoilers, Sarah. We'll have that conversation
sorry.
One day.
Let's talk about Psycho instead.
Listen to like episode 3 or 4 of the podcast and you'll hear Mulk and I have a big discussion. That's the only reason I didn't bring it up this week, Mulk.
It's not
Mulk. And Mulk, what are you watching?
Look, I'm still tucked away in the usual stuff at the moment, with John Oliver, Billions, What We Do in the Shadows and Veep, absolutely killing it Tuesday night. I'm sneaking ahead on a few things. I snuck ahead on The Good Fight on SBS, which I'm loving to death. And I snuck ahead every chance I get on Lego Masters because, seriously, that show is amazing. I'm loving it so much.
Well, I am on the final season of That 70s Show.
Oh my God.
So it's almost over. It's until I find a new binge-worthy show. But
Isn't it How I Met Your Mother?
Maybe I'll do that next. I do love How I Met Your Mother.
I thought that's what you were watching, not That 70s Show.
No, you wrote that in the show notes last week and I changed it because it's That 70s Show. I've got to say, season 8 is a little bit of a punish now that Eric's gone and they've introduced some new characters and, yeah, I'm struggling a little bit. We watched Iron Man 3, been watching Game of Thrones, although I haven't seen the latest episode, so that'll be my next point of business. But I tell you what, I've been listening to the audiobook version of Ladies Who Punch, the book written about The View.
Yes.
If you ever want to know what morning TV is like, I suggest you read or listen to that book because there are so many similarities to television shows around the world, including Australia. That's all I'll say.
Gosh.
And that is TV Black Box for another week. We will see you next week. Remember to go to tvblackbox.com.au for more.
Good night.
Bye, kids.